Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Hello, and welcome back to Finding Your Identity. I'm Derek McKinney, and I'm going to take you through this week's episode, which is going to be about Labor Day and how Labor Day is kind of in a way related to what I'm calling, you know, American identity. And I'll explain why I say that specifically. But, you know, working is obviously a part of people's identity. And I thought it was kind of fitting to have an episode about Labor Day as I'm recording it on Labor Day in 2019. So I'm going to get started in a second, but I did want to kind of take a second and just mention that, you know, this podcast is about finding your identity and, you know, finding it in everything. And, you know, I think the title is confusing to some people because they just think to themselves that they don't need to do that. They've already found their identities. And I've had several people kind of make the joke, like, why do I need to listen to this podcast? I've already found my identity. But, you know, I'd like to argue that we're always, you know, finding out new things about ourselves and finding out things, you know, every day that you're learning and, you know, finding new ways to make yourself happy, finding new ways to, you know, stop being sad about something or depressed about something. But, you know, people are evolving. And so, you know, I felt the need to kind of pause and, you know, say that if anybody was questioning kind of what the podcast was going to do for them, you know, this should be kind of taken as maybe you're going to learn something from it. You know, maybe you're going to find out something that might actually help you in your daily life. Maybe you're going to learn something new about somebody else. Maybe you're going to learn something that doesn't even apply to you, but potentially applies to a relative or a friend. And, you know, I think at the very least, you know, as you go through life, you kind of should try to strive to arm yourself with knowledge, because I think it's probably your most powerful weapon, you know, in life. And it's, you know, it may be heavy on the mind, but it's physically not heavy. It's something you carry around with you at all times. It's a self-defense, you know, it's you know, helpful in a time of an emergency. And, you know, when you need to lend a hand, you use your wits, keep your wits about you, as a saying, because, you know, if you can lean on your own knowledge, it might help save someone's life, you know, help save lives. You never know. So I like to kind of put this out there as I guess it's a PSA for the podcast viewership. You know, anyone who's listening who may be just kind of wondering, like, what am I going to get out of this? And I think it's really the, you know, the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, you should always be learning. You should always be finding. I've gotten the bracelets, always finding, but you should always be finding new things, finding things that might be exciting to you or find things that might help you learn more about other people, other cultures, anything, you know, anything that's going to help you grow. And, you know, the main point is when you learn new things, it feels good and you want to feel good. I think the key to life is happiness is probably some t-shirt somewhere, but, you know, bottom line is I think it's going to make you feel good. It's going to make you feel better. So it's really what I'm trying to convey in this podcast, and I'm trying to keep it light and not get too heavy into details or the dramatics of a story or, you know, get too deep in, you know, politics or religion or anything like that. I just want to keep it at an even level, but also give it enough depth to feel like you've walked away with something that you feel that you actually gain something when you listen to this. And this episode, which is going to be about Labor Day, should hopefully provide you with a little bit of insight, maybe some things you didn't know specifically about the holiday. So that being said, I'm going to get started. Labor Day. It's got a funny name. It's a day you'd think that you'd be actually doing labor. I hear the word labor and I think manual labor. And I think back to when I dug graves or when I worked a grill or a fry station when I was in the restaurant business, you know, because that felt like that was manual labor. And manual labor essentially is, you know, working with your hands and, you know, potentially your feet. I don't know, maybe you're a unicyclist in a circus. But, you know, manual labor is it's essentially when you're not working with your mind and on a computer. I think everything else is just considered manual labor. No, but I mean, you know, it's hard, backbreaking work, I think is what it would be classified as. And, you know, the word or the term Labor Day seems counterintuitive to what the holiday is, but everybody knows it as the end of summer. It's a bookend to the summer because it's, you know, essentially the last party. It doesn't have to be, but it feels like that's your last day to wrap things up in terms of summer. Have your last barbecue that weekend. Maybe go to the beach for one last time. I look at it and I think, hey, man, now the state parks are going to be less crowded because everybody stops going to the state parks after Labor Day, it feels like. Because I think they close or shortly out thereafter. But, you know, I actually think in the state of Connecticut, it's free to park in state parks. Or maybe now you can actually park in state parks for free because there was some rule or law that was just passed recently. But up until a couple of years ago, I remember you had to pay $5 or $10 for your car, you know, in order to get into a state park just to go hang out in a free park. You had to pay to park. So you cut through that irony and what do you get? And I just remember, you know, between, you know, the months between Labor Day and Memorial Day, you know, going in between that time through winter, essentially, you could kind of enjoy those parks a little bit more, unless it was like a really hot day during a heat wave or something like that. And you had this like freak bit of weather, and then a bunch of people went out and ended up at the same place you wanted to go, thinking the same thing you thought. No one's going to be here. The parks haven't officially opened because it's not Memorial Day. But anyways, that always kind of comes to mind. I thought it was interesting, you know, that school was always kind of tied to it. And I remember when I was in school, we were start after Labor Day. Some people say that wasn't necessarily the case. But now it's like kids are starting school before Labor Day for a few days, and then they have this long weekend, and then they go back, and it just seems disruptive and counterintuitive. But, you know, a lot of times I feel like the schools are just trying to squeak in the days so that they can get their budgets. They can meet their budgets, maybe get a little extra money or something. Not entirely sure why you got to force it, you know, these 3 days in. Maybe it's because you're not getting any breaks for snow days, and in New England, that's always a factor. But it seems like every year when they quote unquote bake in snow days, you still end up going to school until the middle of June. So I don't know. Someone maybe can answer that question for me, why that happens. But, you know, as a definition, and pulling straight off of a History Channel website article, you know, it's an annual celebration of workers and their achievements. And it, you know, originated during a time that was tough for American workers, American laborers. And, you know, this was 1800s, and you have to imagine, so at the same time in the country, you had the farmers, you know, farming as a trade was kind of slowing down because the Industrial Revolution was picking up and gaining so much traction. This is when people moved from the rural areas to the urban areas into cities. Cities started to get massively overcrowded. People needed, you know, wanted to live a lot closer to where they worked, and the factories were in the cities, and the cities were near the ports or the rivers or any kind of major thruway in order to, you know, because there was interstate commerce going on. So, you know, that just naturally, that's how the cities were formed. And so then, you know, your cities then get filled with people who are essentially the laborers who are working in the factories and, you know, partaking in this revolution of industry. And the thing was, is there was really no rules to it, because it kind of blew up so fast, you know, this industrial revolution, where it was more of a matter of, we need people to complete these tasks like immediately, because there's such an insane demand for whatever it was, you know, steel or you know, metalworks, or at the time when we started you know, manufacturing, having the manufacturing processes kind of start to form. And you think, like, the time with the Ford motor cars, and how, you know, that started the assembly line in the efficient sense, when they kind of figured out interchangeable parts, as they called it. But you know, the main thing was, is it was just kind of a wild west in terms of filling out the labor forces. And what it meant was, you had the big, you know, big wigs, or the fat cats, or whatever you want to call them, who were just focused on the profits, and they would essentially try to squeak out the labor for as cheap as possible. And so you had the, you know, workers working incredible amount of hours, you know, compared to what's a normal work hour in this day and age. In 2019, you know, an 8-hour day is like your typical day, I think, especially in anything that's maybe government related or unionized labor or something like that. You know, so officially, like, we've got it down to that 8 hours, or, you know, better known as the 40-hour work week, which you break up between, you divide out between 5 days. Now, they were working 12 hours, 14 hours, working in horrific conditions. You know, they didn't have proper ventilation. They didn't have proper safety protocols in place. They, you know, these workers were really, really struggling to just survive working. And they were doing it because at the time it was more money than they had been making prior to that. You know, this was an opportunity for them, even though they weren't necessarily making what they should have been making in terms of a good wage. But, you know, it was just one of those things that as it kind of evolved, they weren't just gonna, you know, the companies weren't just gonna start automatically by default paying good wages, because they were trying, you know, it was capitalism, and they were trying to make their money, you know. So this time period was just ripe for change, and ripe for other people to think that changes need to be made, and for groups like unions to form, where they thought, you know, we need to unionize, we need to stand together strong as a workforce and be willing to go on strike in an effort to get better conditions. You know, at a time when people were working 50, 60, 70-hour work weeks, and, you know, they were working these long days, they didn't really have weekends, they didn't get paid for any time they took off. So this was definitely ripe for that to happen. And so the unions kind of stepped in, and they started to go in full force and help push, and they got the workers, and the workers were glad to kind of join at the time, because at this time they just wanted to improve their working conditions, improve their pay, not have to work as much, want to have a little bit more guarantee that they're going to get paid their wages, you know, because that was another problem, where you'd have companies who maybe were struggling and maybe would hold back payroll, and that was a problem. So, you know, it was a time for the unions to kind of take advantage of this and step in. And so, you know, what ultimately was going on there was, since you know, the unions kind of were stepping in, it started to kind of create political pressure on the president at the time, which was Grover Cleveland, and, you know, and other people that were kind of rising to the ranks. There was, you know, the union presidents or union leaders that were kind of trying to step up and push things in a certain direction, were also kind of being vocal about, you know, having it be more widely accepted across the continent, you know, across the U.S. and not just have it be isolated to just one factory. And the unions were trying to cover, you know, all the steel workers or all the automobile manufacturing workers. And so what that, you know, led to was some, I guess I was going to say unexpected, but as I think about it, probably expected riots and you know, I guess negative problems with it and violence and protests and everything that kind of goes along with friction between one faction and another, you know, like a government or a company, a big company versus the civilians, you know, or these workmen. And that is kind of what sparked the change that was really needed to kind of create the paradigm shift. And, you know, what it was there was actually this one company. There was a railroad man who was, his name was Pullman. His last name was Pullman. And it was, you know, Pullman, the Pullman company made sleeping cars or sleeper cars for trains. And so he was, you know, a big railroad magnate. And he actually did really well, even to the extent that he created a town just outside of Chicago called Pullman, Illinois. And, you know, and while things were great, you know, everything was all fine and dandy, everybody kind of, I guess, tolerated him or liked him because, you know, he provided housing. You know, he had this town, they did their banking through the Pullman Bank, and, you know, he provided places to live for these people and kept the wages coming in steadily, and everything was happy until there was a recession and the rents didn't change and, you know, the cost of living didn't change, but people were laid off and didn't have jobs or the wages were cut, so they weren't making as much money, but they still had the same bills. So this was obviously, you know, a problem. And, you know, to the extent that it led the workers to strike, and, you know, it kind of sparked a stoppage or boycott of the use of these train cars or use of the railroads that were using these train cars. And, you know, it actually kind of sparked a political debate again about it, or, you know, it came to the attention of the president, rather. And, you know, what ended up happening was, to kind of try to save face, you know, the president actually sent troops to, and there was actually an act called the Sherman Antitrust Act, which was leveraged to say that it was illegal for this boycott and for the strikers to strike because it was, you know, stopping something essential like the railroads. And so he sent troops, he sent, you know, United States military troops to try to force the workers to go back to work. And, you know, that just didn't end well. You know, if you think back to any other times that the Army's been dispatched, like Kent State or, you know, stuff like that, in the South, where you have the Army that's trying to enforce rule. Even today in 2019, you hear this in Hong Kong. You know, I don't think the military necessarily has been sent to the front lines, but the police are definitely there doing some questionable things. And, you know, that doesn't seem to ever solve anything. I mean, I feel like the people got to sit down and talk, but they, you know, they're struggling. And so this is what was happening, basically. at that time in history when there was these riots and some violence that occurred where officers died and civilians died, and you know, it was kind of a bloody stain on the industry. It was definitely a stain on the presidency at the time. And so what ended up happening was this union leader, whose name was Eugene Debs, who was a union leader for the American Railroad Union, and he's the one who called for that boycott and, you know, kind of helped escalate things in a matter of speaking. But he also, you know, was the one who was liaison to speak with the federal government. And, you know, what ended up happening was is they kind of came to an agreement and the workers were going to go back to work. And so it was in that same year that was 1894 that the president at the time, I mentioned Grover Cleveland, had Congress sign or petition Congress to sign a bill that would pass it to make a federal holiday Labor Day, make Labor Day an official federal holiday, and to call it out as being a way to celebrate workers and to celebrate the sacrifices that they made and the value that they bring to the country, and they keep the country running like a good engine should be running. And, you know, so that kind of is what really kind of sparked things to even give a lot of weight to the unions. You know, this in itself was a day that they kind of set aside, but it made it valid. It gave that validity to the unions to say, listen, this was obvious problem. Like, this was something that needed to happen. And this gave legs to a lot of the other areas of industry to have their workers essentially unionize. And, you know, the unions lasted strong. I mean, they're still around today. There's still unions, but they're not as strong as they used to be. But the unions were, you know, very strong, you know, up until, I can't even think, maybe the 70s or maybe like the 70s or 80s. I think when you start seeing manufacturing jobs go overseas, you know, you see jobs basically being outsourced, like that's when unions kind of end up getting weaker, you know, because the employees, what do they have to unionize if the employees don't have jobs, you know? That's kind of jumping a little bit too far ahead in history, because really it was between that period, you know, when it first kind of became big in 1894, right, where it was really national news, I guess, for striking, because unions had been around for hundreds of years, you know, but it really gained its momentum and traction during the Industrial Revolution, you know. But that kind of only lasted, you know, for so long, because, you know, whereas when you think of in the future, you know, and I'm jumping ahead to when outsourcing happened, 70s, 80s, you know, 90s, when jobs started going overseas, and it kind of felt like, what was there to unionize? But there was an opposite effect, because during the 20s, you know, the economy was doing so well, and it seemed that the companies were just naturally, I think, maybe been conditioned by the previous unionizations. There was less reason for people to want to be in unions and maintain being in unions. So it kind of fell off, you know, and it was just, you know, during those, the 20s and 1920s, it was just going so well, like there was no need for it. So what kind of brought it back in full force, though, was, you know, after there was the First World War, there was the Great Depression, and that, you know, essentially was kind of the turning point when the unions really kind of, you know, came into need, because during that Great Depression, it was kind of back to trying to find the cheap labor, because the companies were still trying to produce stuff, you know, when they could, but people were fighting for jobs. So, you know, they didn't have to treat workers. Like, it was just like a supply and demand type thing. There just was way more people needed work than actual work was needed to get done because the economy was, you know, doing so poorly. So, you know, it just kind of led to conditions that workers could be taken advantage of. And, you know, the unions kind of picked up steam during that era and kind of, you know, maintained that steam through like the 40s and the 50s. And then World War II kind of interrupted things again. And it mainly is because, you know, during the war, all the efforts were needed for the war, you know, everything in that was being manufactured, because all the manufacturing was redirected towards defense manufacturing, and it was illegal to strike because it would have, you know, impeded the U.S.'s ability to fight the war effort. So there, you just couldn't strike at that point. But as soon as the war was over, then it was strikes all over again, because then it was like, we need to course correct here and get everything back on track because everything's been out of whack for so many years during World War II. And, you know, that's actually the true point, which, you know, that's between the 40s, 50s, you know, into the 60s, that's when the unions became very important to helping get labor laws passed and helping to get workers what they really deserved. And not to belabor this point about unions, but, you know, it was kind of with that power and the strength that they had that things started to creep in, like corruption. And that's when you hear about the organized crime, you know, groups, families, whatever you call them, started to get involved, and then it became corrupt, and then it became really problematic. So, you know, that also kind of led to its demise for many years. But they're not completely gone because, you know, they're still around. Like I said, you know, there's some cases to be made that they were instrumental in getting President Obama elected and then reelected. And, you know, they're still around and they're still strong. And, you know, but I have to say, you know, I think you like that day off at the end of the summer. I think you can owe a lot of that to the unions. So, kind of why I spent some time talking about them. So, I think something interesting is the fact that, you know, we celebrate Labor Day on the first Monday in September. But what's interesting is, you know, it was originally proposed as an international holiday, and most other countries, I think it's just the U.S. and Canada. I know it's the U.S. and Canada. I just think it's those two. But other countries around the world, they celebrate May Day, and it's in May, and that day is meant to celebrate workers and, you know, laborers, and be that holiday, you know, that's kind of celebrating the work that they do for their respective countries. So what's interesting, though, is that the reason why we kind of turned it into a fall holiday or an end of summer holiday was because, for political reasons, the people that were kind of pushing, you know, having a Labor Day, well, that one person that I mentioned, that Eugene Debs, actually ended up being a pretty important member of the Socialist Party. And there was fear that was going to be associated with that holiday if we celebrated that May Day and it was, you know, around the same time as other socialist countries celebrating that, you know, May Day, which was a for laborers. So the decision was made when they passed this law to institute a holiday was to do it in September and to kind of keep it as far away from that other day as possible, you know, where it still made sense to have it be, you know, a holiday that wasn't, hopefully wasn't associated with socialism and, you know, giving traction to the socialist movement. So it's kind of interesting, you know, tidbit. The first Labor Day parade was actually in New York City. There was, you know, a parade in 1882. So this is before Labor Day was actually officially deemed a day. And, you know, it happened in September. It was near the first Monday of the month, but, you know, didn't actually happen on a Monday necessarily. Might have happened on a Sunday. I don't know. I have to look back in 1882 on a calendar. Well, I guess it was a Tuesday. Like when I just happened to Google it real quick. But, you know, there was 10,000 people who actually attended it, and they were workers, and they had bands, and you know, they made it a parade, they made it a party, and you know, that was kind of the first coordinated party. And it was, you know, again, they were labor organizers or members of the union parties to actually help kind of get that off the ground. So it's kind of interesting, you know, that it was almost unofficially kind of deemed a good time. And then, so I think it was easier for the government, you know, or the president to be like, yeah, let's make it September and not have it associated with May. For other reasons, it looks like we did it on purpose. You know how things go. So not a ton more to really say about Labor Day today that I can say. I don't know, trying to stretch out a rhyme. But they, you know, interesting thing that always also kind of goes around with Labor Day, and this always seemed silly to me, is in fashion, there's a saying, you can't wear white after Labor Day. And you start looking into that as if it were a fact, and there's nothing that really says why, and there's no real good rule for it. There seems to be some history behind it, which seems to be tied to fashion, but I you know, saw a couple places that mentioned possibly it had to do with at a period of time when, you know, wealthy people were, there was old money versus new money, and because of this, there was no way to kind of differentiate. So some of the old money, high class ladies kind of spit this rule out there or spread it amongst themselves as a way to try to be able to spot who the, you know, the fakers were, the new money ladies were, because they were wearing white after Labor Day. And that was a key indicator that they just weren't in the know, and they weren't in the cool kid club. And that's just stupid. But, you know, that's just me. Like, that's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, who gives a crap? But anyways, that's an interesting thing. You know, I think most people would argue wear whatever is comfortable, whatever's clean. I personally don't wear white because I swear every time I wear something white that day, I guess I want to have a sloppy Joe that day because I'm not thinking I'm wearing white. But whatever I'm eating seems to end up on those clothes. I remember having a pair of white jeans when I was like in high school. For some reason, and there were like baggy jeans, and I think they were like the carpenter style too, with the extra pockets. It just was a dumb thing. Like, it was just one of those, like, this is a ridiculous thing to own, white jeans, you know? And then you got a constant fear, like, did I sit on a melted chocolate chip and now it looks like something happened in my pants? Like, you never know. So I don't understand white jeans. It never made sense to me. I mean, women, I guess, look better in white jeans than men do, but still, it's so dangerous. It just seems so risky in such a dirty day and age, you know? I mean, I don't know where the heck, maybe if you're sailing, but still, then you got, like, fish that could jump out of the water and land on your, your lap or something. Who knows? Obviously, I'm not high class. Obviously, I'm like going to probably wear white tomorrow. You know, an all white outfit, all white tracksuit outfit. But, you know, and that's to say, as a final note, as I wrap up, be careful driving, especially on Labor Day. Memorial Day too, but Labor Day has high statistical reasons to be careful because of the amount of crashes or deaths that occur. You know, I think, you know, it's probably this past year estimated to be around like 400 or something like that. And that's probably just for the U.S. And it's probably, you know, AAA has a study or something. But, you know, it's often dangerous. You also have to be careful because you're going to see a lot more cop presence out there because they're going to be looking for drunk drivers, you know. But that's always a problem in your holidays, 4th of July, you know, Memorial Day, Labor Day. You got higher presence of cops out there because they're looking for people who might be drinking and driving, and that's just not smart. I mean, any kind of intoxication in driving, you know, smoking pot and driving, whatever it is. But yeah, so be careful. That's all I got to say. So I'm wrapping up this episode of Finding Our Identity, and I want to thank you for listening and invite you to stop back again for the next episode, which for all intents and purposes is going to be episode 20, because that's what the numbers in the universe are telling me it should be, and math. And because 20 comes after 19, and it might be something special. So you should tune in and do not be influenced by the non-listeners, even though they have unionized and their demands are ridiculous. You know, who would think that many people want Munster cheese or Moonster cheese? It's ridiculous. Until next time, I'm signing off. This is Finding Our Identity.